Give us a taste of the Tathagata's words. I want to begin by talking about Zazen. Last night I talked a little bit about posture. What I recommend to people is when you sit down to do Zazen, every single time you sit down to do Zazen, you give yourself Zazen instruction, as if you were talking to some, as if you were giving Zazen instruction to somebody else. You say, oh, bow out of the cushion, I sit down, I put my hands like this. This is for Zen, or Zazen, this is preliminary hand position. This is maybe Vipassana, but this is preliminary, and then we put our hands in the mudra. But when we put our hands like this, we sway as far as you can to the right, and then you sway as far as you can to the left, and then each time you sway, you make us a smaller swing. And this prepares, it's not exactly preparation, it's also Zazen. It's swaying Zazen. And this way you loosen up your knees and you loosen up your body so that your body becomes flexible. So this is to make your body flexible. That's the most important, is to make your body flexible. When I say most important, I mean the most important thing I'm talking about.
Right now.
So you want to find the foundation for Zazen, for your body. So the reason we sit like this, we could sit in other ways, but the reason we sit like this with our legs crossed is because it makes a triangular form. And the triangular form is fundamental form, which is the hardest form to knock over. So that's stability. First is flexibility, and then the second is stability. Create a stable seat. Then we find our posture. So this is very important, posture. The most important thing is posture. And posture, if we look at a vertebrae, the vertebrae is not like this. It's not like a board. It's kind of like that, right? And at the bottom, the lower back, it sways in. That's straight for posture. So you want to not exaggerate, but to accentuate that curve, because that's where your effort is to hold your upper body. If you don't have that curve, then you're working really hard to sit up straight. When you find the posture, finding that curve, I call it pushing your lower back forward, then you raise your sternum. When you raise your sternum, you can feel it in your lower back. So those two parts are the two fundamental parts of your posture. Raising the sternum and pushing your lower back forward, and one helps the other. So when you do that, your head naturally finds its place on top of your shoulders. Most people sit like this. I'm exaggerating, but I'm not. one form or another of this. When your back is bowed, you lose the strength of your back, of your posture. So, like this, and lift your sternum, and your head goes on top of your spine. The head is a big ball, it weighs a lot. And when it's not, when it's out of line, it puts a strain on your body. When my head is going like this, it puts a strain on my back. It's like, geez, even my back really hurts. So you want to keep your head on top of your spine. And even though you may be sitting up straight, you still go like that. This is the thinking position. And this is the really thinking position. So we want to let go of attachment to thoughts. You can't stop thoughts. The nature of the mind is to think. And if it can't find a subject, it makes one up. So you find this flood of thoughts that this your mind is constantly making up in order to have something to do. So there is something for the mind, for the thinking mind to do in Zazen. We give it something to do. And it's called think the thought of Zazen. So when the mind wanders, think the thought of Zazen and come back to posture. So first, here's how you lower back forward to its natural position. When you do that, then the weight is on your thighs rather than on your tailbone. When the back is just straight, then the weight goes onto your tailbone. So you don't want that. You want the weight to be on the lower thighs here, because the thighs can take it, even though you say, oh, now that hurts. Yeah, but it's better than being on your tailbone. And then one reason to lift up the sternum is that if you don't, then you collapse. If the shoulders come forward, and there's a hole, so you want to open it and not collapse. Open, and you just keep opening. The more you open up, the less the pain it bothers you. So your ears are in line with your shoulders. This is the hardest thing to do, is to keep your ears in line with your shoulders. Often your ears are in line with your knees or your middle thighs. So you want them to be in line with your shoulders, and then everything is straight. We used to carry the wake-up stick called Ikkyosaku. That's our Japanese tradition, but we don't do that much anymore. But the teacher will go around and put the stick, align the stick with your back so that your head is leaning against the stick, and your shoulders are leaning against the stick, and your buttocks is leaning against the stick, and that's straight, except that your lower back is like this. It's not leaning against the stick. So another way of thinking about it is that there is a rope or a cord attached to your head, your cranium, attached to the ceiling, and somebody's going like this with the cord and pull you up. So you're stretching. Our tendency is to collapse. That's our tendency. But to actually practice as a you should feel that you're stretching. Not too much. Not too much stretching. But just stretching your waist. Stretching your waist. And sitting there. That's the most comfortable way to sit. Any other way puts strain on your body. So then your nose is in line with your navel. So you're not leaning backward, forward. You're not leaning backward. You're not leaning to the left. You're not leaning to the right. You're sitting just straight and in balance. And so the muscles in your lower back are holding you up. And all the rest is free. That's the only effort there is. Yes, and your shoulders drop. You can let them fall off. It's okay. Try it. Try letting your shoulders fall off. It's okay. They won't go anywhere. And all that extra muscular effort will just drain out. So this is called lightness. This is how you find lightness. Because you're being totally aerated. The reason you're being aerated is because the breath is going down to past your lower past your solar plexus to your lower abdomen and oxygenizing your blood. So when you breathe down here, you inhale and the lower abdomen expands, and you exhale and it contracts. This is where the breath, this is natural breathing. This is forced breathing or anxiety breathing or fear breathing. When your breathing is up in your chest, sometimes I ask people, where's your breath? Gee, I don't know. You should always know where your breath is. Not just when you're sitting zazen, but all the time. Your breath is what saves you. When you have difficulty, you concentrate on your posture and your breath. And when you're having a lot of difficulty in zazen, you can just, it's just one breath at a time. You allow your consciousness to be totally one with the breath. And when you exhale, and then inhale, and exhale, inhale. And so there's only breath, and there's only one breath at a time. And that whole breath, that one breath, covers everything. So this is how we concentrate on breathing. So when you have the right posture, the breath goes down naturally. So there's no anxiety and there's no fear because the breath is here. When we let the breath come up here, we open ourselves to fear and anxiety and discomfort. When we feel discomfort, we start to breathe in our chest. So we're not fully functioning. So this is how we can let go. It seems contradictory because when you see someone sitting zazen in a really good posture, it looks like they're very rigid, but they're actually very loose. So all of our limbs are connected with tendons, or one way or another. They're not fixed to each other. Each one is separate. So to allow each part of our body to be separate and yet aligned, doing its proper function. So this alignment is balance. When all of the parts of our body are aligned, doing the same job, doing the same thing, it's balance. So you're perfectly balanced, and there's just enough effort and just enough ease. I don't like to say relax, because when I say relax, they make a ease is the proper word. Effort and ease, because when you have just the right amount of effort, then everything's easy. And you feel at ease. So this is how we work in zazen. It's not just putting yourself on the cushion and hoping for the best. And then we hold our hands in the mudra. After you do that, we hold our hands in the mudra. So the mudra is called the cosmic mudra. You're holding the whole cosmos in your mudra. This is emptiness, and this is form. Form is emptiness, and emptiness is form. And the thumbs are not going like this. Sounds are facing each other and very lightly touching. It's touching as if there, almost as if there was a piece of paper in between them. And this is like the barometer of Zazen. The mudra is the barometer of Zazen. It tells us what our disposition is. If we find the thumbs pressing against each other, you know, there's some imbalance in our posture. There's some too much effort. And then if they start falling apart, you know, I'm getting lazy or I'm not paying attention. So to maintain that subtle touch helps us to maintain our disposition in Zazen. And it tells us where we are. And then we keep our eyes open. But you know, your eyes always want to close. I feel good. Because our eyes are always kind of sore anyway. Too much TV, looking at the monitors. So, but we make an effort to keep our eyes open. You know, if you read the book's a, you know, a little slit, you know, so that you let it in light. But actually, you can, as long as you keep your eyes open, that's good enough. And then you keep your gaze down from straight ahead. If you start looking down too much, then your head starts to go down with your eyes. So I recommend just a little down from straight ahead. And you don't want to sit like this. So, maintaining this posture the whole time. See if you can. Here's another thing. Not everybody can hold their back straight. You know, if you start when you're younger, like at 60 or 70, it's easier. But not everybody can hold their back straight. You know, people have various problems. And also, a lot of us don't have the muscular tone to maintain that. So this is the ideal posture. And so if you know the ideal, then you do you have to decide how you do that, how you work with your body, given what the ideal is. And you don't compare yourself to somebody else. You say, oh, this guy, you know, he's this expert at sitting Zazen. That should be example, but it doesn't mean that you have to match that. Your Zazen is your Zazen. Her Zazen is her Zazen. His Zazen is his Zazen. Everyone according to their ability to sit. But making the effort is the most important thing. There has to be some effort in Zazen. It's a combination of effort and ease. If we only want the ease, we don't get anything. And if we only make the effort without balancing with the ease, then we wear ourselves out. So we're always finding that balance between effort and ease. Effort is like, you know, when we open ourselves up, this is like, how much am I going to give to the universe? What do I have to offer to the universe? Is that what I want to offer to the universe? Is this what I want to offer to the universe? So you present yourself wholly and totally the best you can. And what else can you do in life? As I said last night, half-hearted, you only get half. Wholehearted, you get the whole thing. I know that not everyone is a Zen student, and some of you are Vipassana students or Tibetan students, and you have your own way of doing things, and I have no objection to that. But while you're here, you might take the opportunity to practice with the forms the way we practice with them and see what that's like. Do you have any questions about Zazen? You must have something. Stupid ones are best. Yes?
When you hold your hands in a mudra position, what about your elbows?
Yeah, what do I do with my elbows? When I this is a circle. We're composed of circles. So, this is a circle, sort of a circle, you know, it's an oblate spheroid, but we call it a circle. And this is a circle. So people sometimes say, you know, it's really hard for me to hold my mudra because my arms hurt or my elbows hurt or something. So, but in a circle, every part of the circle takes the same pressure. So, when you hold your hands in the mudra, you think about circle and evening the pressure so that there's no pressure on any one part that's more than any other part. And then it holds itself. Yeah.
Describing almost this ongoing feedback loop. I mean, all these things are being adjusted all the time, and then so do we just do that?
Yes. Yes, it's like micromanaging. Micromanaging. Because it looks like you're still sitting still. Sitting still is, you know, we try to sit as still as possible. But no matter how still you sit, the body itself is just always changing. It's always subtly changing. And so we have to keep readjusting all the time. So there's no, you may say, oh, Eureka, I found the posture. And as soon as you say that, it changes. As a matter of fact, everything is changing. As soon as you say, oh, this is nirvana, this is great, it starts to change. And then, where'd it go? Wait a minute. And then the more you want it back, the harder it gets, the more you suffer. This is the lesson. This is Buddha's lesson about suffering. We get something good, and we say, this is it. And as soon as you say this is it, it starts to change. And then you get something bad, and you say, I don't want that. And as soon as you don't like it, so you say, I don't like this, or I don't want it, you start to suffer. So suffering comes both ways. Grasping is suffering, and rejection is suffering. This is the lesson of the Four Noble Truths. So you have to, the lesson is don't hang on to anything. As soon as you hang on to something, I remember my teacher Suzuki Roshi saying, if you hang on to the tail of a comet, people will pity you. We hang on to stuff and it pulls us around. We get pulled around all the time by what we're hanging on to. It's not that we can't work with things, but we have to be able to let go and we have to be able to take up. But we take up and let go, and we let go and we take up. But as, when we become attached to things that are constantly changing, as if they weren't, that's called suffering. We, you know, there's a certain stability to things. And that's a kind of delusion. Because the stability of things is a false notion. There is nothing stable. We're log rolling. We're treading, rolling the log, and the log is just rolling along. As soon as we stop dancing with it, we get thrown in the water, fall in the water. So it's a, life is a dance, and we have to keep dancing with it. And there's something that we treasure, but whatever it is we treasure, will go. And whatever we don't like, will come. So, you know, when Buddha talks about the Four Noble Truths, he says, and about suffering, not having what we want is suffering. Having what we don't want is suffering. Being with people that we don't want to be with is suffering. Not being with people we want to be with is suffering. And so on down the line. Those are just examples. So in Zazen, we learn the lesson of what it means to let go and receive. Receive doesn't mean to grasp. It means to let things come and let them go. I don't like, you know, pain is not the same as suffering. Pain is pain, and suffering is suffering. Suffering is when there's pain and we don't want it. As soon as you say, I don't want this, you start suffering. As soon as you say, I don't like this, you start suffering. And we do all the time. I don't like things. You know, I don't want them. But we have to be able to get beyond like and dislike and hanging on to them. In our ordinary life, you know, we have room to wiggle. We have lots of wiggle room in our ordinary life. But in Zazen, there's no wiggle room. There's absolutely no wiggle room. Things happen just like that. So you have to decide right away. I don't like this. You can say that, and then you go, uh-oh, there it is. And you just open to it. We have to open ourselves. And when you do that, it takes time to understand how to do that. Because you say, well, there's the pain, I'll just open myself to it, and then it starts being worse, right? So you can't say anything. You just have to keep opening. So if you start opening from the beginning of sitting, then you can accept everything as it arises. But if you wait until something severe happens, and then try to be open to it, that, it doesn't work very well, because it's already too late. You just have to take the consequences. So it's like opening yourself moment by moment to every sensation, and don't say, oh, this is pain, or this is hate, or this is, you know, don't name things. As soon as you name things, you create them. Naming creates. There are people who practice meditation doing that. I can't, you know, that's okay. But in Zazen, we don't name sensations because we just give them form. As soon as you give them form, then you have to deal with them. So we just open to the sensations without naming them. And then you will find that as you open, you become lighter. And this is where you feel tranquility and serenity. It's not that you eliminate sensations called pain. It's just that you don't let them develop and dominate you. You don't become a victim of your own feelings. this is the lesson of Zen, the lesson of life. Then you begin to enjoy Zazen. And, you know, it's not like there's no more pain. It's just that it's just a sensation. This sensation. And then there's this sensation. And then it changes to this sensation. So the sensations are constantly changing. Mental states are constantly changing. You know, we get some kind of a mental state, and we either like it or we don't like it. If we like it, we want to keep thinking it. If we don't like it, we want to stop thinking it. But mental states just come and go all the time. And these mental states are called the scenery of our life. The mental states, the physical sensations, it's like riding in a train and you're looking out the window and admiring the view. Don't get caught by anything. This is what my old teacher used to say. Don't get caught by anything. But we get caught by stuff. We're constantly, we have eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and so forth. So we say the eyes are hungry and they're always eating. We eat through the eyes. We eat through the ear. We eat sounds through the ear. We eat smells through the nose. We taste through the tongue, and we eat feelings, through the body, and the emotions. So, and this is what we call our life, right? The stuff that comes in. But what happens is the senses are the doorways of perception. These are the doorways. Without the six senses, five or six, there are more. We're cut off, right? So these are the feelers, you know, like the bug, you know, their feelers out. And we have our feelers out the same way. We're bug, just bigger bugs. And we and collect sensations through these senses. And then the consciousness differentiates between those senses. So, oh, this is hearing, this is smelling, this is tasting. But it doesn't attach to those sensations. It's our ego consciousness that attaches to the sensations. And we create a sense of self out of those sensations. And then, so this is a false sense of self, which in Buddhism, in psychology, self has one meaning. In Buddhism, self has a different meaning, even though they may overlap. But in Buddhism, self means a collected self, a false self, a self that's laid over our true self. So it's our layer, right? And it's what blocks our realization or enlightenment, because as soon as we start creating a self out of the stuff that's coming in through the senses and hanging on to that, we create the situation for suffering. It's okay as long as you like it. That's what my old teacher used to say. As long as you like it, it's okay. You know? But if you want to see through it, you have to do something about it. So, where is the real behind the made-up self? Where's the real self behind the made-up self? All the conditions are the same, but what we do with those conditions is different. So, don't create situations that, or don't make up situations that create suffering. That's Buddha's message. So, don't create an ego. And so we say, let go of the ego, let go of the ego, kill the ego. Well, you can't do that. ego is necessary. A sense of self is necessary. So we relate to each other through the sense of self, or ego. And we'd say, oh God, this guy's got a big ego. Right? And then we say, oh, so-and-so's got the little ego. But the little ego is what we need in order to relate to things. Right? And it gives us a story. So we need a story. We need those. This is why when you go to the store, you have a story. No pun intended. And you're going to go get the butter, right, and the groceries. And that's your story. But when you're actually walking, the reality is that right now it's one step after the other. But because we're so caught up in our story, we can't see what's really going on in a more fundamental sense, because we want to perpetuate our story. So egoless means to stop creating your story, even though you need a story. So you need a story, but it should be a story that's not, that's awareness of what you're, how you're creating a story, and that you're not harming yourself or others with it. If you look at our world, the egos are destroying the world. And very few people are looking for the reality. Everybody's looking for the reality, but nobody knows where it is. Nobody knows where it is. But we all know it's the egos. A sense of self, defending the ego, you know. So, how to move in the world without being caught by our desires, our false desires, actually, you know, chips, coke, something to satisfy this thing restless. Satisfying this restless thing. And so we satisfy it in all kinds of ways. But everybody is looking for the right way, even though they don't know it. And, you know, I don't know if this is the right way, but it's the way to reduce suffering in the world and reduce suffering for yourself. If you can reduce suffering for yourself, that's how you help people. You know, you can work in a hospital and fix people up and all that. That's great. But how do we fix people up fundamentally? How do we serve people so that they can find their direction in a way that's satisfying? So everybody is looking for satisfaction. And we take it out in various ways. And of course, a lot of those ways are, you can't complain about them, but if you learn through experience the fundamental way to stop causing suffering for yourself and others, that's probably, I think that's as good a thing as you can do. So that's why we sit zazen. That's why we have sesshin. Sesshin gives you a big opportunity to sit still and not, when we say don't move, it means if you move when just because it's not comfortable, you never get to the point where you can get through. You have to really experience the discomfort and how to be one with it, instead of a voice. As soon as you start to run away, it's much faster than you are. It always catches up in your discomfort. You can't run away from it. You can only go into it or be one with it. As soon as you're not one with it, then that's called discrimination. Discrimination means to divide. So to be one with it means that there's only one thing. And when there's only one thing, there's not a problem. The problem is when there's an opposite. Good creates bad. Right creates wrong. And vice versa. And when there's no right or wrong, and no good or bad, there's no problem. The problem is not the problem. It's not the same problem. Because there's nothing pulling the other way. Soon as something starts pulling the other way, you have tension, and then you have pain. So that's why don't try to fight the pain. That's the worst thing you can possibly do. I'm going to fight this pain. It always wins. I mean, it's the weight of the universe bearing down on you. It is, literally, the weight of the universe. Because we live, everything exists with certain pressures outside and inside. And the pressure inside and the pressure outside is like an airplane. If you don't have a pressurized cabin, the whole thing collapses when you get to 30,000 feet. So you have to even out the pressure inside and outside. And when those pressures differ or are unequal, you have a crash. You have a problem. So I can't tell you exactly how to do that. I can give you hints. But we each have to find our own way. And we have to be determined enough to find our own way. But as I say, do the best you can. All we can do is the best we can. And don't make too much effort, and don't relax too much. It's very simple principles. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you.